Our Old Testament reading comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 61, verse 10, through chapter 62, verse 3. Let us listen for the Lord. I will greatly rejoice in the Lord. My whole being shall exult in my God. Excuse me, for he has clothed me with the garments of salvation. He has covered me with the robe of righteousness, as a bridegroom decks himself with a garland, and as a bride adorns herself with her jewels. For as the earth brings forth its shoots, and as a garden causes what is sown in it to spring up, so the Lord God will cause righteousness and praise to spring up before all the nations. For Zion's sake, I will not keep silent, and for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until her vindication shines out like the dawn and her salvation like a burning torch. The nations shall see your vindication and all the kings your glory, and you shall be called by a new name that the mouth of the Lord will give you. You shall be a crown of beauty in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Our New Testament passage today is from John chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. Let us listen for the word of the Lord. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He came into the very world he created, but the world did not recognize him. He came to his own people, and even they rejected him. But to all who believed in him and accepted him, he gave the right to become children of God. They are reborn, not with physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. John testified about him when he shouted to the crowds, "This is the one I was talking about when I said, 'Someone is coming after me who is far greater than I am. He existed long before me.' From his abundance, we have received one gracious blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses, but God's unfailing love and faithfulness come through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but the unique one who is himself God is near to the Father's heart. He has revealed God to us." This is the word of the Lord. As human beings, we have a unique, well, a peculiar relationship with work. Even when I say the word, different things jump into your head, right? Is work good or is work bad? Totally depends, right? I mean, especially for, as a male, seem to be a little more dependent on vocation for sense of identity. But we as a very, I mean, usually the first question a group of guys start asking when they get together is, what do you do? Right? Like, if I want to know who you are, Chuck's an electrician. Dan's a pastor. We ask each other what we do because we definitely start identifying ourselves with the work we do in the world. On the other hand, we also have parts of us that would love to be done working, right? Like, oh, they don't, they call it work because that's what they pay you for, right? If you didn't want to do it, it wouldn't. And so there, we get to retire and not do work anymore. Right, retired people? No, not true. Work is something that I believe is core to who we are as human beings. Not that it can't get out of place, but from the beginning, even before sin, the story in Genesis, has human beings involved in work in the world, right? Genesis 1, part of the first story, the big story of what we're doing here, Genesis 1, verses 27 and 28, God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and govern it. Reign over the fish of the sea, the birds in the sky, and all the animals that scurry along the ground." From the beginning, before the fall, before something went wrong, God made this planet and then gave us the job as human beings of taking care of it, of growing it, of making it a beautiful place. In fact, this is one of the things we see in Genesis 1 even before that, is God at work, right? First verse of the Bible, you probably all have this memorized, Genesis 1:1. How does it start? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The first thing we see about God, about what God is like, is God as a creative force. That God is doing work, whatever that looks like. That God is making beauty. That he's bringing order out of chaos. The text stresses over and over, light from darkness. That there's the water. God separates the waters above from the waters below. That God is ordering this universe into a beautiful place. That God is bringing light into darkness. That these are core to our understanding of what God is and what that looks like in our world. That Genesis 1 says God is at work bringing goodness and light and beauty into this universe. And of course, it also insists that we as human beings are created in the image of this God. Which means that we look like this God, that we act like this God, that we were made to be reflectors of what God is like. And so if God is at work in our world, bringing light and beauty and order, then we as human beings are, of course, created in that image, that we have work to do here. Not work that is just scratching, fruit out of a thorny ground, but that there is this deep calling and purpose in bringing beauty and light and order into the places where we each live and where we each find ourselves. I'm going to get tired of telling campfire stories at some point, but it hasn't happened yet. Sorry. So one of the things that amazed me most about watching everything that happened up there in paradise after this fire is I think I was up there on day 3 after the fire. There was still telephone poles on fire, trees smoldering. And already there were thousands and thousands of people at work. Not just firemen. And to be sure, there was still an army of firemen going around mopping up hot spots and doing all sorts of things. But there were thousands of PG&E workers already. Like, day 3, we're driving around trucks full of new telephone poles being hauled up the hill. I mean, after the devastation, I mean, seeing what you see, I would have thought, there's no way there's going to be power up here for, 6 months. They're bringing there's trucks up there with hydro cores that they can, I don't know, some of you may know about this, but they spray, hydraulic water, they spray water at high pressure in this small diameter and suck it out at the same time vacuuming, and they can core a telephone pole hole in about 3 minutes. Just perfect, drop some gravel, the pole and some gravel around it, dump some concrete on it, and they're off to the next pole. They're stringing line. There is an army of forestry and tree personnel going around cutting down trees that are dangerous. I mean, there's some amazing stuff where the stumps are burned half out, and these trees are big. They're coming down at some point. I saw a guy with a 60-inch bar on his chainsaw. He's carrying it over his shoulder, and the thing's as tall as he is. I didn't even know they made chainsaws with 60-inch bars. 5 feet. A 5-foot bar on a chainsaw. And they can just rip right through one of these trees. Timber coming down. Really amazing to see all of these different human beings partnering in this purpose of starting to get paradise rebuilt, fixed, power back, able for people to return. These two texts that we read today, Isaiah 61 and John 1, are very much pictures of God at work, of God acting and moving and doing something in our time and space. I want to read them again, and as we go through it, I want you to look for at least some of them. The John one's long. I'm going to read the Isaiah one. Look for what God's work is in this passage. What is this author telling us that God is still doing? Isaiah chapter 61, starting with verse 10. I'm overwhelmed with joy in the Lord my God, for he has dressed me with the clothing of salvation and draped me in a robe of righteousness. I am like a bridegroom dressed for a wedding or a bride with her jewels. The sovereign Lord will show his justice to the nations of the world. Everyone will praise him. His righteousness will be like a garden in early spring with plants springing up everywhere. Because I love Zion, I will not keep still. Because my heart yearns for Jerusalem, I cannot remain silent. I will not stop praying for her until her righteousness shines like the dawn and her salvation blazes like a burning torch. The nations will see your righteousness, the world leaders will be blinded by your glory, and you will be given a new name by the Lord's own mouth. The Lord will hold you in his hand for all to see, a splendid crown in the hand of God. There's some pretty specific and amazingly wonderful things that God is doing in this passage. What'd you catch? God is clothing us with garments of salvation and righteousness. That's what God is doing. I think I went on a rant about this a couple weeks ago, but if you weren't here, righteousness, by the way, in the Hebrew context, is much more about compassion and mercy than it is about rightness. We confuse those things in English. This does not mean being right. It means being incredibly good and for and kind to the people around you. This text insists that God is at work helping us become those kind of people. Becoming the kind of people who are clothed with salvation and righteousness. It says that God is at work causing righteousness and praise to spring up like plants. I love this time of year in Northern California because when the rain comes, what happens? Almost overnight, right? Like, I love, my running route from Heather's parents' house is out West Street. I go out to Road 25A, cut over to Pedrick and or whatever it is out here, back in. And within a day of the rain falling, there is green shoots coming up. I mean, the brown fields just turn green. One of the coolest things about where the fire burned up there in Paradise, it takes a while for the green to get through the dead grass, if the dead grass is still there. But where the fire burned all of that off, instantly the hills are just this verdant green. No brown underneath it at all. It looks like a rainforest. It is so vibrant and lush. And it just springs up from the ground. It is incredibly beautiful. This text pictures God doing that. Not just in the earth, right? God created this earth and set this up as a place where that happens, where light, incredible beauty can spring up from the ashes. But that God is causing righteousness and justice to spring up like that in us and our world. You want some hope? God is at work doing that. That he is seeking to help righteousness and justice spring up within us, around us, among us. Text says God is giving us a new name, calling us who God created us to be. And of course, this goes back to that discussion about work and who we are. I mean, our identity, our name is our identity. It's who we are. God is at work calling us to become precisely who he created us to be, our truest selves, our best selves. You know this. We all have the sides of us that are selfish and greedy and short-tempered and annoying. But we also have the sides of us that are beautiful and holy and kind and loving and patient and gentle and wise. This text insists that God is at work on us, in us, and through us, bringing that out. It's what it means to be calling us by a new name, to be helping us grow and develop into the people God has created us to be. The text says that God is giving beauty to the world. The sunsets this past week, have any of you guys seen them? They've been incredible. Sky lighting up in pinks and oranges and yellows. To me, the strongest arguments for God is simply beauty. There's no reason I should find sunsets. They're beautiful. Where does that come from? Why do I think this is something so amazing? And that's everywhere. The text is insisting that God is at work bringing that into our lives and world today. It is so tempting and so easy to conceive of God in more of a deist function of somebody who maybe just made the world and walked off and left it. But these texts insist that God is still at work, that God is still doing these things, that he is still causing righteousness and justice to spring up like the green leaves, that he is still calling us into becoming our better selves, that he is at work within us, transforming us and changing us. The text in John says, and by the way, I hope you didn't miss the connection. This is very intentional. First lines of Genesis 1, in the beginning, God created. First line of John 1, in the beginning was the Word. John is very much connecting God's work in Jesus with God's work in the universe, the whole thing. That Jesus is an expression of who God actually is. In fact, John makes kind of a breathtaking claim that's a little bit at odds with the rest of it at the end. I don't know if you caught it. Verse 18, the last one we read, "No one has ever seen God, but the unique one who is himself God has revealed God to us." So, having read the Old Testament, there's a few people who claim to see God, right?
Not visually.
Well, Moses sees his back. You know. John makes this insistence that until Jesus, we have no clue. That's right. That Jesus coming into our world, that this presence of God with us and for us, Emmanuel, is a revelation of who God is that is unprecedented and definitive. That we actually, before this, don't have a clue. But that through Jesus, we do start to catch a glimpse of what God is like and what God is doing. I think it's no accident in Luke, when Jesus stands up and starts his ministry, he's quoting the same chapter in Isaiah that we just read from this morning. God's work in this world, who God is and what he's doing. You've heard this, right? "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to comfort the brokenhearted, to proclaim that the captives will be released and the prisoners freed. He has sent me to tell those who mourn that the time of the Lord's favor has come." In Jesus, we see God at work in our world, doing exactly that, right? Bringing belonging, good news, victory to those who are least advantaged, to those who have the least resources and the least status. We see God coming in and bringing healing and wholeness and belonging and peace. God is still at work in our world. He is still at work in us. John insists that he is making us children of God. That we don't make children never make themselves, right? God set this up this way. Children are made by their parents. That's how they come into this world. And John insists that we are children of our God, who is still at work making us, shaping us, growing us, pouring out, as John says, grace upon grace. And that Jesus is at work revealing God. That we still get invited into this incredibly beautiful exploration of discovering more about who God is and what he is like. My favorite line from The Shack. If you haven't read it, I'd highly recommend it. It's an amazing book conceptualizing this guy's experience with God. My favorite line from it is that love is the skin of knowing. And the idea is that we can only love to the extent that we understand or know someone or something, right? Like for your love for someone or something to grow, you have to understand more about it and know it better. For you to love your spouse, of course, the process of falling in love very much looks like learning about the person you are in love with. You don't get tired of asking them questions and hearing their stories and discovering more about what they like and who they are. Our love grows as our knowledge and understanding grows of someone or something. And so for God, for Jesus to be involved in this work of revealing God to us is very much this process of enabling us to love God more, of expanding our understanding of who God is like and what he is doing in our world. And the more we get this and the more we understand this, the more deeply we are drawn into that story. Because, of course, this also deeply connects God's work in this world with our work in this world. That we, as God's children, are also called to be about our Father's business, right? And it's the beauty of the ancient context, said in the Christmas Eve program, but kids grew up doing what their fathers did. If your father was a carpenter, you learned how to make chairs. If your father was a fisherman, you learned how to mend nets. If your family business was farming, you were out there in the fields learning how to plant the wheat. If we are sons and daughters of the God of the universe, what is our vocation and calling? Bringing light, bringing love, bringing order out of chaos, beauty from ashes. We cannot see our work and God's work as separate. This is the deep truth of these passages in our existence, is that we need to recognize that we as children of our Father are called to be about our Father's work in this world. One of my family traditions, growing up, my mom just had one brother, but he had four kids, and so it was a pretty big family. And my Uncle Ed and his kids and us would get together somewhere, usually at Christmas. And we'd spend the holidays together, and it seems like invariably, no matter where we were, one of the things we did as part of our gathering together was work. We'd pick off some project. If we were at my grandparents' house, who lived in Paradise, and this one cracks me up because we did it over and over. It's not a problem anymore. But they had this big house. They had this three-car garage that they could never park a car in because they just kept. And it was funny. We had this joke. We couldn't send Grandpa on the dump runs because if we sent him to take something to the dump, he would likely come back with more than he left with. But when we had Christmases at my grandma's house in Paradise, we'd be like, hey guys, we can do this together, let's get together, we're going to clean out a couple stalls in the garage and get grandma and grandpa's cars in there. And we'd do it. And it was, everybody had their jobs, right? Like the little kids are doing stuff the little kids can do. My uncle's amazing at everything, that he can rebuild a transmission, he can fix a house. So it was so fun to have people doing their jobs and pitching in together and being a family as accomplishing something and making this place better, leaving it better than we found it. One Thanksgiving, my aunt and uncle expanded their house. And so we were literally hanging insulation and starting to hang drywall and running. The day after Thanksgiving, Black Friday, we're all doing work on the house. And then, you know, the next year there's this incredible extension. It was an added dining room that we all got to celebrate the next year in. One year we'd moved into a new house in Michigan, and they all came in, and we started putting plants in the ground, and we landscaped the whole thing, and everybody was pitching, and it was actually incredibly fun to partner together and to be able to have people with different gifts and abilities and strengths doing work together to make the place better than we found it. See a parallel? This is precisely what we are invited into in the big picture. That we get invited into leaving this place better than we found it. That we all have different gifts, strengths, abilities, things to add, but that there is a job and a role for all of us in partnering with our God in bringing light and beauty and grace and love and order. I believe this is what God is still doing. We need the signs out there. As you leave this building today, you are going out about your Father's business. There is something for you to do, and it is not just another day, another dollar. That there is specific and beautiful work that you are called to that may have nothing to do with the paycheck, but that where you earn your paycheck is precisely the place God has you planted to do this work. That God is seeking to reveal himself and be made present in each place and each person and each time. And this includes precisely you. Let's sing our hymn after the sermon. I think it's number 184.